No, when liberals are given free rein, an opportunity in a friendly environment to speak their mind, the truth comes out. And then things get a little bit unpleasant because as soon as these candid remarks reach a broader audience, retractions need to be made. Sam Rogowski here, Sam Nation Radio Network. Happy Friday, friends. Andrew Cuomo, the Democratic governor of New York State, on Wednesday delivering some remarks in New York City at a bill signing. Now, he, by the way, I'll tell you, the genesis of these remarks, it's interesting because previous to this, on Monday, Trump singles Cuomo out at a rally, in Utica, New York, for Representative Claudia Tenney. Now, he's out there, you know, on the campaign trail. You picture the type of event that a Trump rally is. And he begins to, as Trump is freewheeling, baits Cuomo and taunts him with this little snippet. Play the tape.
They want to end your Second Amendment, and they're putting a big move on it. And Cuomo wants to end your Second Amendment more than anybody. Cuomo wants to take away your Second Amendment. Now, he called me and he said, I'll never run for president against you, but maybe he wants to. Oh, please do it. Please. Please. No. He did say that. He did. And maybe he made it. The one thing we know, and they do say, anybody that runs against Trump suffers. That's the way it should be.
So this is, obviously Cuomo, if you follow anything, he's one of the names out there that's being bandied about as a 2020 contender on the Democratic side. The problem with Cuomo, yes, he's the brother of Chris Cuomo and the son of Mario Cuomo, the longtime governor of New York. And also, I think wasn't he a candidate? He ran for president in the 80s. The problem with Cuomo is that he takes the bait. And I have, for as long as the Trump presidency has been a thing, been talking about this issue of Trump derangement, that it is truly a medical condition. And I'm about to see another manifestation of this. So Cuomo, hearing what Trump says at the rally, and this little clip is played over and over again, for sure it reached his ears. Friends, make no mistake. Cuomo heard this. And so you can almost hear it in his voice when he is at this bill signing 2 days later in New York City. He is going to lay the smack down on Trump. He's going to. And what does he do? He goes for Trump's cornerstone campaign slogan, Make America Great Again. And this is what he says.
The simple point is all this comes down to this. We're not going to make America great again. It was never that great. We have not reached greatness. We will reach greatness when every American is fully engaged. We will reach greatness when discrimination and stereotyping against women, 51% of our population, is gone. Because we have not yet fully liberated the women in this country.
I have a question. First of all, do you think that maybe this guy ended up at a Ambien party with Elon Musk? I mean, he just slurring his words. Assuming there's no drugs involved, can you hear the anger and the angst in his voice? He is taking it to the Trumpster. America was never great. We were never the great country that we think that we are. We are a loathsome country. Now, I'm adding certain words here that he prevented himself from saying because, of course, liberalism, socialism, communism, the isms of the left can never be fully articulated lest they scare everybody away. But the idea basically is, and what Cuomo is saying here is, look, we are a loathsome country. We are a racist country. We are a bigoted country. We're a sexist country. We're an oppressive country. It beggars belief, right, that this that they don't learn from it. So he issues a retraction very quickly. I didn't mean it. Of course, we're a great country and da-da-da-da-da. But that no longer means anything, right? We know better and understand that this was a provoked moment of candor. And it is instructive in so much as it sheds light on who the luminaries are in the Democratic Party and what a losing proposition their real agenda is. You give these folks free rein, all right, and this is the kind of garbage that comes out of their mouths. Yeah. Well, look, you cannot have it. You cannot have it both ways. If you are the Democratic left and you are out there on national TV or in various newspapers or on Twitter, whatnot, shouting about how we are a nation of immigrants, how we ought to open the door to all these people that want to be here, many of whom, right, are people of color, presumably, statistically, we'll say half or so are women. People who are oftentimes coming from countries where, let's say, gays are not welcome, and they perhaps are of that orientation. Why the hell are they coming here? So on one hand, we are led to believe by the Democrats that we must open our doors and we're a nation of immigrants. This is a, you know, and Trump is the meanie at the gate, barring people from experiencing the opportunities or enjoying the opportunities that this land provides. But at the same time, we're not a great country. See, this is right. And it's not merely a statement of we haven't achieved the optimal greatness. No, we were never a great country. And to me, as a son of immigrants, this is so infuriating. I'll tell you, even Carter's America was a better place, was a place that was good enough, great enough to entice my parents to leave everything behind and to move here. America, folks, America in 1977, when my parents made that trip, was not the America of 1987. It was not the America of 1957. 1977 was a crap year here. But still, we were a great country with a great constitution founded on principles that truly matter to the success of individuals as human beings and as citizens. These principles are part of our DNA. They trace to our founding. But the left wants those principles eradicated. How many times did we hear Obama say, this pesky constitution, this document that was drafted by rich white landowners? Now, he didn't always say exactly those terms, but this is the implication. Rich white landowners, men, exuding their privilege, drafted a document. And it's just getting in the way of our progressive agenda. Remember election night 2008, Michelle Obama declared, we are the ones we have been waiting for. And this is, again, I'm just trying to understand the mind of the liberal. Everything that happened before is garbage. And we are here to save the day and turn the apple cart upside down and create a whole new nirvana. Every place where this type of nonsense is propagated, read Venezuela, read Czechoslovakia, read the USSR, or any other country that has fallen prey to socialism, communism, and other leftist policies, the places turn to garbage in a New York minute. This is a fact. Human liberties are suppressed. The state becomes all powerful, and oppression like these people have no idea about. Quote, the people that are talking on CNN, the people that I've heard this week on MSNBC talking about how oppressive this country is, let's say vis-a-vis the John Brennan fiasco, where Trump finally pulls Brennan's security clearances, and all hell is breaking loose on the left, claiming that this is some sort of evidence of us turning into a despotic country where freedoms are being trampled underfoot. I mean, it's fascinating to me. Really? I will talk more about that in a little minute. So, long story short here, folks. This is why I keep saying that what is their selling proposition? As a party, as it relates to the midterms, as it relates to 2020, what's the selling proposition? Is it we're the anti-Trump party? We are here to check Trump and to keep Trump, you know, corralled in a box. Well, that's all fine and dandy, but then that assumes that everything Trump, not just Trump the person, but Trump's policies are wildly unpopular. The brilliance of the Trump campaign was making this about America. America is and ought to be a unifying concept. America comes ahead of Republican, ahead of Democrat, comes ahead of white and black, comes ahead of straight or gay, male or female. America is what unifies us. And I have long said, until I'm blue in the face, that the entire leftist agenda here is to take people, put them in boxes, separate us, say, oh, well, you're this group and you fall here on the victim hierarchy chart. So you deserve these benefits. They can only be given to you by us as long as we're in power and given access to the levers of the state machinery. And that empowerment is not individual empowerment. It's statism. It's the very statism that we hear Trump getting accused of. So to me, this stuff really, really, really boils my blood. But I am pleased from time to time when a moment of honesty, a breath of fresh air comes from the Democrats. And Andrew Cuomo stepped in it here. He let his true feelings out. But don't believe for one minute anything to do with his retraction. That thing, that's a joke. All right, Brennan. I don't understand this. So I'm, you know, maybe this is because I'm not in government. Thank goodness. In the private sector, let me ask you something. Have you ever been fired? I was talking about this yesterday a little bit on air with Tim Conway Jr., my friend, on KFI. Anyway, and Timmy made a great point. He says, look, you know, I remember getting fired from a radio station. Here's how it goes down. You get, they come in. They've already got your stuff boxed in a, you know, they've got it in a box. They hand you the box. They walk you out the door. And as they're walking out the door, they pull your ID card and that's it. You get no further access to the building. And we laughed. We said, yes, this is exactly how it works in the private sector. I am actually surprised in this conversation that what happened to Brennan is so unprecedented. It's not actually, by the way. For example, what Brennan is claiming was done to him, Trump revoking his security clearances because Trump felt that Brennan was being critical of him and that perhaps, you know, Brennan's security clearance would never have been revoked if he were expressing flattery to the president. Fine. If you accept that premise, that's fine. But it's not that kind of retaliation, if you will, is not unprecedented. In fact, Brennan did it himself. You know, Chris Peronto. It goes by Tonto Peronto. This is the Army Ranger who helped write the book 13 Hours that was turned into the movie about Benghazi. And he refused to go along with the Benghazi cover-up narrative, right? The BS that Hillary Clinton, State Department, Obama administration was trying to have, you know, that history of the timeline whitewashed for their benefit, for their political benefit. And he didn't go along with it. And guess who revoked his security clearance? It was Brennan. It was John Brennan, the same a-hole that is pontificating today, every day, all day, all week, about what a monster Trump is and how this is just the most despicable, despotic thing ever to happen in this country. I'll tell you this. I got to take a break. When I come back, I will tell you just how big a piece of garbage this John Brennan character is. And it was high time that Trump take out the trash. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, back after this.
In this present crisis, government is the solution to our problem. Government is the problem. And Sam Nation is the solution. Of course, you need jelly beans for that.
Rogowski, it's all connected. Look, the same way that Cuomo gets baited by Trump, right? He's in the rally, Trump is teasing him, saying, yeah, run, this guy's a dummy. And so Cuomo says, I'm going to show Trump. I'm going to piss all over his Make America Great Again slogan. But in the process, he, you know, accidentally pisses all over America, which isn't a really great move. We call that an unforced error, and professionally in my world. Anyway, that same thing is what's happening to Brennan here. Okay, let me explain. Brennan's duplicity goes back quite a ways, and it, by the way, it precedes the Trump administration. Brennan, this is the guy who told his top five spies at the CIA, handpicked reliable people, to spy on Dianne Feinstein and other members of the Senate who were about to publish a scathing report about torture at the CIA. And fearing that this report would become public or that there would be embarrassing information, of course, if you're the CIA, what do? You spy. The only problem is, you're not allowed to spy on Americans on American soil, let alone a very, very, very bad idea to spy on senators. But it tells you everything, absolutely everything you need to know about John Brennan. One, he's not very bright, because if you're going to spy on somebody who can't fight back. Spy on the little guys. Yeah, if the Constitution doesn't matter a hill of beans to you, the Fourth Amendment, what's that? Who cares? Of course, Brennan doesn't care. He's a former communist. In his dream world, there is no Constitution. There are no rights. The state is all powerful. The state is in control. The state knows best. And you and I, we're just idiots. We're useful idiots. And the minute we become unuseful, off with their heads. Well, anyway. So Brennan, what does he do? He spies on Feinstein, other members of the Senate, and gets egg on his face over it. He's caught lying under oath to the Senate Intelligence Committee and gets excoriated, by the way, in liberal publications like The Atlantic. There was a piece, I think, written in December of 2014. I have it here somewhere. And anyway, it's devastating. It's devastating what this says about him. Here's the Democratic response from the Senate Intelligence Committee in December 2018. A statement issued Thursday morning said that John Brennan, the agency's director, had apologized to Ms. Feinstein and the committee's ranking Republican and would set up an internal accountability board to review the issue. But anger among lawmakers grew throughout the day, leaving nearly a three-hour briefing about the report in the Senate conference room. Members of both parties called for the CIA officers to be held accountable. And some said they had lost confidence in Mr. Brennan's leadership. 2014. Yeah, this is December 2014, but this is before Trump. This is Obama era. Brennan was already doing dishonest, gross things back then. So move forward now to the election. 2016 is coming up. Brennan, like everybody else that doesn't know what's going on, thinks that what? Thinks that Trump is going to lose, thinks Hillary's going to win. But it doesn't kind of worry you when the head of the CIA, we're supposed to figure out what Iran's doing. Hell, this guy can't even figure out what's going on in Washington. So he thinks that Trump's going to lose. Hillary's going to win, and he needs to suck some money, right? He's got to go, mwah, Hillary, mwah. And how does he do it? Well, he finds that, who's that dolt from Cambridge, that professor? Finds this dolt professor from Cambridge. His name is Halper, right? Stephen Halper. And he foists this guy on Flynn, on General Mike Flynn, to spy on him, because Flynn's a close confidant, was a guy advising the Trump campaign on matters of national security. So this guy, Brennan hand-selected this Halper guy to go with Flynn. And this Halper guy, he's getting paid, what, $5,000, $10,000, $15,000 per whatever it is. He's got a contract, and he's got to show something for it, right? When you have a source, this is always the danger of paying sources, right? You have a source they want to deliver on. It's human nature. So the best that Halper can do with Flynn is say, yes, I see him speaking to a Russian historian at a conference. That's it. Russia collusion. And from that little kernel, we are now in Mueller land with this crazy investigation, aided and abetted by other deep state types like Sally Yates, et cetera, et cetera. So now, that's who we're dealing with here. And by the way, this guy, Brennan, was an avowed communist. I don't even understand. The American Spectator said, what do you mean losing a security? How did he get it in the first place? The real story here is, how the hell did this bozo ever become the head of the CIA? It's not a he was supporting a candidate back in the 70s. Who was handpicked, was selected by Moscow. He's a plant. Such a joke. 1976, Gus Hall. It's a thing. Look it up. All right. We got our legal segment up next. Then a little more on this. And, of course, other stuff. Yeah, I will get to the Omarosa story. And it's not the aspect of it that you would expect. I am looking at it through employer's eyes. I'll say that. All right. Sam Rojofsky, back after this.
I was listening the other day to a friend of mine. His name is Sam, Sam Majowski. You'll find him very entertaining. He's very stylish. He's always wearing his suit. And if you want to hear someone's opinion that absolutely is correct, you listen to Sam. Anyone else is a waste of time.
Sam Rojofsky, Sam Nation, here on the Sam Nation Radio Network. All right, Elon Musk in the news. Big story written on him. Interview done with him that was published yesterday in the New York Times. And I'll tell you what this comes down to almost entirely, and that's stock price manipulation. This is a dicey legal issue if you are a head or a member of, affiliated in any way with, a publicly traded company. What does publicly traded mean, right? It means you have stocks, you're listed on the stock exchange, and your shares are up available for purchase by you or I, right? It's not a closely held company. And so when you go public, if you start a business and you issue shares for that business, you now become very heavily regulated because, well, we believe in traditional notions of fair play, don't we? We think that if little people are going to go, and little people, me, I mean, I don't know what's going on, you know, with a big company somewhere, you know, in California or New York or Texas for that matter. I don't know what they're doing. I rely on information that's publicly available to make decisions whether I invest or not. And if a company does not give truthful information, it's a problem because it could influence the way I spend my money. It could be a form of fraud. There is a reliance I have on that information being true, and on that basis, I spend money. I purchase shares and, you know, potentially lose money. Make sense? Okay. And this is where Twitter can really, really, really mess you up if you are a CEO or an executive at a company, at a big company, at a publicly traded business. And the reason it's instructive in the example that happened here. Elon Musk sends out a tweet saying, I'm taking the company private, funding secured, $420 a share. That's $420 per share. Now, at the time he sent this tweet, stock price was, I don't have it exactly in front of me, was substantially lower. And it was lower because there's some really, really big guys in the industry who are putting shorts on the stock. This is when you bet that the stock is going to go down. You buy at that rate. And if it goes down, you make a lot of money. But if you don't, you lose it all. Okay, so it's bad, right? So once you begin putting, let's say, and there's guys that were putting in hundreds of millions of dollars on betting that Tesla stock was going to go down. So he puts out this tweet, and all of a sudden stock goes up, and these people lost a lot of money that day. Now, here is the truth of it. When people lose hundreds of millions of dollars, these people don't just go away and lick their wounds. They are PO'd, okay? That's not a legal term, but it's what drives prosecutions. A lot of people don't understand this. Generally speaking, cops don't refer cases to a prosecutor, and prosecutors don't prosecute if there isn't a victim. And most importantly, there has to be a vocal victim. If you ever wonder, you know, hey, that guy did something and that guy did something, but that guy got a lot more jailed. I got the book thrown at him. Why? Well, a variety of factors, but one of them is the victim in the second case was really upset. So if you're gonna screw somebody over, let's say, you know, commit fraud, you make that person whole and you take care of them. Make sure they're not upset, because if they're upset, they're going to come after you. This is what I suspect is happening. It's not anywhere in the news, but the guys that lost money here are going to the SEC and are going, hello, you see what he just did? And make him back it up. If he didn't have the funding secured, as he claims in the tweet, he is in deep, deep trouble. And I think this explains, right, this article, he's talking about how he's just, the world is crumbling, he's working these 120-hour weeks, and he's on Ambien and whatnot. And I suspect he's starting to set up a case for why he's, you know, why he's sort of slipping here a little bit. But I think it's a problem. And again, I you know, this guy's a revolutionary guy. He's done a lot of great things. But, you know, Ambien doesn't mix well with anything, okay? Especially not tweeting as the head of a publicly traded company. So don't do it, all right? And that's my legal advice for the day. Sam Rogowski, back after this.
You're looking for a show that doesn't sugarcoat the truth. Sam Nation will accommodate you.
Sam Rogowski, you know, I actually want, I feel some sympathies for Mr. Musk, for Elon Musk, the head of Tesla. The idea of these tunnels underneath LA are great. Whatever he's tunneling for underneath the city, I hope that mode of transportation is a lot faster than the bullet train. I just love that the government of the state of California can't put rails on top of the earth while a guy who's drugged up on Ambien and losing his mind is tunneling with relative ease under vast portions of, I don't know, one of the busiest metropolises in the world. Anyway, pointing that out. John Brennan. Let's go back to this guy for a minute. This is the head of the CIA for a number of years, a former communist back in the 70s, late 70s, supported a guy, Gus Hall, who was a Soviet proxy candidate here in office. It's crazy that he even got his security clearance to begin with. We have somebody here in the studio who, at least at one point in time, held a security clearance, They don't like it necessarily when you have ties to foreign governments who have, at periods, been hostile to the interests of the United States. Do they? That's what I thought. But the absurdity, I love the absurdity here, right? The absurdity is that you've got this former communist who becomes the head of the CIA and then now claims that a patriot like Donald Trump isn't sufficiently hostile to Russia. I mean, that's the American Spectator had a great piece about this. That's the argument. And by the way, well, I mean, listen, this is Brennan whining about it. Listen to this. Listen to his voice. Gosh, I want to punch the guy. Listen to this.
I do believe that Mr. Trump decided to take this action, as he's done with others, to try to intimidate and suppress any criticism of him or his administration. And revoking my security clearances is his way of trying to get back at me. And I've seen this type of behavior on the part of foreign tyrants and despots and autocrats for many, many years during my CIA and national security career. I never, ever thought that I would see it here in the United States. And so I do believe that all Americans really need to take stock of what is happening right now in our government and how abnormal and how irresponsible and how dangerous these actions are.
You know what's abnormal and dangerous? It's when the CIA is spying on senators who are the very body elected to oversee the agency. Right. The separation of powers enshrined in our Constitution has it that the Senate and Congress in particular, right, that they are the checks and balances to the power of the executive branch, the CIA being a part of the executive branch. And so, I'll just put it to you this way. Imagine that Trump was caught spying on senators. Wow. I mean, yeah. What if he planted a bug in Maxine Waters' boudoir? Can you imagine that? Oh, I wouldn't want to be the one doing that. Well, anyway. Last I checked, Nixon was chased out of town because he likely directed some operatives of his, paid for by his campaign, to go in and spy on the Democratic Party, on political opponents. And the left now has weaponized not PIs, not former, you know, spies and spooks that are now in the private sector. They are weaponized employees of the U.S. government that are paid for with our tax money, whose purpose it is to keep this nation safe. And these are the people that they are using to spy on political opponents. And by the way, before you make this thing about Trump, remember, this guy, this Brennan guy, he did this to Feinstein, too. He doesn't care. And it's because, but by the way, once a communist sympathizer, always a communist sympathizer. Trust me, this guy gets excited over statism. He gets excited over these, what did he call it? Oh, autocrats, the type of behavior on the part of foreign tyrants and despots and autocrats. Come on, man. You probably had Stalin posters. You got excited about Brezhnev and all of his medals and various accoutrements. Give me a break. Sam Rejofsky, back right after this.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, ladies and gentlemen, on the show tonight is Sam Marjowski. Now, what Sam is the leading word in correct thinking, as opposed to Ed, which is drunk thinking. And that's usually where the left ends up, on the wrong side of right.
Oh, you know why Brennan doesn't like Putin? Because Putin doesn't like gay people. Brennan was one of these unsufferables who would walk around with the rainbow lanyard in the halls of the CIA. You know, he was like a safe space guy. Don't get me wrong. I'm not advocating against safe spaces. I think people should respect people and call it a day. There's no room for disrespect. I love gratuitous virtue signaling, so favored among the liberal elites. And this is exactly what he did. So this is a guy who's walking around. He's got the gay pride, you know, lanyard. He's got an ID card hanging on a rainbow. Pretty good sum up for a left winger. Yeah, actually, it's pretty funny. I guess, did he keep his security clearance on a rainbow lanyard? It's a great visual. Trump coming up to him and just yanking that rainbow right off. I can't even handle all that hate. Yeah, but you know what? The Bolsheviks, man, let me tell you something, Brennan. They loved gays. Oh, yes, they did. I'm joking. It was not a good thing to be a homosexual in Stalin's Soviet Union. Okay. Peter Strzok, another one of these Brennan types, he now has, you're not going to believe this, they've actually... The left has organized a GoFundMe page. This is where you donate. People can kind of crowdsource for causes. Usually, you know, hey, Susie's dad is dying of cancer. You know, we need some help here and, you know, to pay for medical bills. That's usually the kind of cause. The three-legged dog, you know, that got run over by a Tesla. That's, you know, those are the kind of causes that generally we see. No, now Peter Strzok, the disgraced former fired FBI agent who was having an affair with Lisa Page, has a GoFundMe page. I thought this was a parody at first. They were literally joking about this. No. This is real stuff. So I'm, and by the way, so here's a guy who has a stated preferred bias for a political candidate and against another, inserts himself deep into the investigation of both, right? He's working on the Clinton email scandal, but he's also providing help to Mueller in Trump Russia. He's exonerating Hillary. We forget this. People always forget that Strzok didn't just maybe prosecute Trump a little too viciously. He's also the guy who lets Hillary off the hook. He then tries to claim with a semi-straight face that bias played no role in the outcomes of these investigations. And even gets, you know, the independent inspector general, a registered Democrat, basically throws the book at him. And this guy comes into Congress smirking. And the left wants to create a GoFundMe page for this poor guy. You know, the left truly, and I mean this, has no shame. And maybe this is something that we as conservatives are kind of, this is why we give Trump a pass. On all the personal stuff that we don't like, we give Trump a pass because you guys on the left have been so shameless, so gross in the abuses of human decency with this nonsense that, you know what, we're willing to say our guy's okay. If he's delivering on objectives that matter, you know what? Go climb a tree with your complaints. That said, I think that there's... I don't like the TMZ aspect of this Omarosa firing. There is something here that I want to discuss with you. Let's get into that a little bit here next segment. All right, let's do this. Back after this.
We shall fight on the airwaves. We shall fight on Twitter and Facebook. We shall broadcast our program
whatever the cost may be. And if Sam Nation lasts for 1,000 years, men will say this was their finest hour.
Hi, Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, here on the Sam Nation Radio Network. Happy Friday. We are headed for another weekend. I always have this great opportunity to talk to you right before the weekend, and I enjoy that. I hope you're all going to do something fun or relaxing, if you're not working, I guess. This story this week, right, has been dominating the headlines with Omarosa, the former celebrity apprentice, or what is she, the apprentice. She was on The Apprentice. That's how she became a quasi, you know, D-minus celebrity. And Omarosa ends up in the Trump White House. Now, the interesting thing here in the story is that she's got these tapes. This woman is like, she's like the, speaking of Nixon, she's like the Nixon White House on two legs. Recording, hoovering up all these conversations. And she's already, as of right now, what is it, to 10:35 on Friday, she's released, I think, three tapes. And these tapes are, first, her termination, led by John Kelly. Second, it's a conversation that she has with Trump after the firing. And the third is one with Lara Trump about work potentially for the campaign following her departure. So there, we'll call them relatively in chronological order. None of these tapes really have anything too damning, in my opinion, and generally I think have been sort of received in a fairly lukewarm way by the media. There's not much to them. The greater issue is this claim that Omarosa has listened to a tape where Trump uses the N-word. And this has created an enormous kerfuffle and has dominated headlines this week. And I have this first observation or thought as this was all unfolding. Trump has got to be, I think it's fair to say, maybe the most polarizing candidate I have ever experienced or witnessed in my lifetime. And in some respects, he may be the most polarizing candidate since Goldwater, even before. I mean, it could very well be, in the last 50 years, the most polarizing candidate. Although if you go back further in American history, there were some equally controversial figures. So here we have a highly controversial guy that the Democratic Party, that Hillary Clinton has more money than God to throw at his total destruction. The best that they could do was a 10-year-old tape of Trump having a little guy's talk, right? The Access Hollywood tape, talking about how he was going to grab women by their meow-meows. And that isn't even exactly what he said. You know, he says, you're a celebrity. And when you're a celebrity, man, you can do anything. So that tape established that Trump, thrice married, cheated on a wife or two multiple times, that he was a scoundrel. And we listened to it. The public heard it. And I think for the most part, yawned. If there were a tape of Trump using the N-word, I just cannot believe that it hasn't surfaced yet. I just can't believe it. I'll be shocked if it does. And that's simply, how deep are we into this now? It's almost the end of 2018. And Trump began this campaign 2015. Let's say they didn't quite take him seriously in 2015. So we at certainly beginning of 2016, he was a real threat. And he didn't just have Hillary Clinton as an opponent. At first, he had all these Republicans running against him. He had the National Review out to get him. He had Bill Kristol and all of his cronies at the Weekly Standard. I mean, everybody was ready to take Trump down. It wasn't just the left. It wasn't just Hillary. And that none of them got this? I don't believe it. the guy that supposedly has the tape, the guy that supposedly had it is a guy, Bill Pruitt. And Bill Pruitt is the former producer, apprentice producer. And he is who Omarosa claims played the tape for her. Now, Pruitt denies it flat out. And that's all I know about it. The bigger story to me is I actually thought you always lead with your juiciest tape, right? If you're trying to sell a book, which is what she's doing, she's got a book out there. You sort of want to lead with your big aha, here we go. And her big aha was this minute and a half-ish long tape where she's being called into the Situation Room by General Kelly, Trump's chief of staff, and gets terminated. Now, I am not an expert on terminations, but I ought to be because I've handled a few of them, more than a few. And I, in my opinion, Kelly did this whole thing wrong. So let's have a listen. Let's play this tape now. It's long. I understand it's long. It's important that you understand how long it is and how tortuous it gets in some parts. So let's start it, and I may just have to pause it as we go through it to provide my color commentary.
Hi.
Hi there. How are you?
Hi.
My assistant.
Could you leave us alone?
Sure.
Okay, stop right here. Just stop the tape. So she comes in with her assistant, and Kelly goes, could you leave us alone? But there, by the way, there are other people in the room. He's got a couple of attorneys, and he mentions that next.
I'm only going to stay for a couple of minutes. These are lawyers. We've got to talk to you about leaving the White House. It's come to my attention over the last few months that there's been some pretty, in my opinion, significant integrity issues related to you and use of government vehicles and some other issues. They'll walk you through the legal aspects of this. But there is some, from my view, there's some money issues and other things, but from my view, the integrity issues are very serious. I'm stuck with my past experience, and that is when we hold people accountable in the military, I compare what I see here at the White House and other issues that I've had to deal with and say, what would I do to this in this case if I was in the Pentagon dealing with a Marine or a soldier or something like that? And in the issue that you may or may not have a full appreciation for, but I think you do, this would be a pretty high level of accountability, meaning a court-martial.
Hold the tape. Okay, so, hi, Omarosa, have a seat. These gentlemen are lawyers. Okay, we have some problems. This is about your time here at the White House. There's some accountability. We got some money issues. We've got some... what else does he say? He gave some there's some legal aspects. All of this right here, this part of the termination conversation is totally unnecessary. Even in crazy, crazy California, we are an at-will state, right? Employment at-will state, which means that unless you've contracted some different arrangement, you don't need a reason to let somebody go, and you shouldn't give a reason. You shouldn't put yourself in a box. You should assume that whether it's legal in the state that you're in or not to record somebody, that your person that you're terminating is recording you. Generally speaking, bad people, people who are doing crappy things in their job, know that the end is coming. They all pretend that they don't. They all, what? I'm so surprised. What? But everybody knows it's coming. They know they're getting the axe. And so you've got to assume in the world of cell phones and technology that they're recording. Okay. So what do you do? The tape continues. I'll tell you right now, this is what he should have said. This is what I do. This is what you do and you ought to do if you're a boss, if you're a chief of staff or whatnot. Hi, Omarosa. These guys are lawyers. FYI. Well, you don't say FYI, but you can say, hey, it's time to make a change, and unfortunately, you will no longer be with us. These gentlemen will take you through the process. Thank you so much for your service. Have a great day. And you walk out of the room. And the reason for this is that the person making the decision, and Kelly, by the way, as this tape continues, Kelly makes it clear that he's the one making the decision and not the president. Okay, so you're the decision maker. Kelly's the decision maker. So you make the decision and you do not leave any opportunity for the person to fight or to argue with you. You've made up your mind. This Omarosa needs to be out. The decision was, I don't get, for me, this Omarosa deal is trash in, trash out. I think she was trash going in and she was trash coming out. And it's a tremendous lack of judgment on Trump's part to have ever let her near the White House. I think there's an explanation for it, which I'll get into in a few minutes. But this firing could not have gone any worse. And what does it tell us about Kelly? This is the guy that the media is making out to be the adult in the room, the guy who's got vastly superior management experience. You understand that when Trump in The Apprentice says to people, "You're fired, see you later," that's actually a pretty decent firing. That's how it ought to be. Continue with the tape.
Legal action here. Just stay with me.
That I did?
What?
That me? It would be a pretty serious offense. So with that, I'm just going to ask you, these gentlemen will explain it, and we'll bring the personnel person in after they talk to you. But just to understand that, I'd like to see this be a friendly departure. There are pretty significant legal issues that we hope don't develop into something that will make it ugly for you. But I think it's important to understand that if we make this a friendly departure, we can all be, you know, you can look at your time here.
Stop. All right. So now he's threatening her. Now he's saying, look, we got these significant issues over here. And hopefully we don't have to prosecute you. Do you know what this is all about? It's all about the fact that she's using company cars or she's using White House cars for personal use. And she's running up thousands of dollars and she's getting fired for it. I mean, they did the absolute right thing getting rid of this person. And she's, you know, like I said, I think she's just, you know, she's played the entitlement game very long. But why make, if General Kelly wanted to be a badass, what he ought to have done is say, here we have it. Here is we've added up all these unauthorized trips. You owe us. You have stolen from the White House $17,382.15. It's time for you to leave. You know what the implication is. You've got that hanging over your head. You don't have to say it. And so it continues. I'm not going to bore you with the rest of it. So it just and ahs. And then he suggests that, well, maybe we could find a place for you on the campaign and this and that. And my concern is that if you're going to run a tight ship in the West Wing, do you have a guy that can't even fire a stupid idiot like Omarosa without umming and awing all over himself? The tape with Trump is classic, too. Did you guys hear this? The next tape that she recorded is great. Do you have that, Robbie?
Omarosa, what's going on? I just saw in the news that you're thinking about leaving. What happened?
General Kelly came to me and said that you guys wanted me to leave.
No, I nobody even told me about it. Nobody.
Wow.
You know, they run a big operation, but I didn't know it. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Damn it. I don't love you leaving at all.
Okay. Does anybody believe him? So it's the wrong criticism, right? All I've heard in the media is people saying, oh, it's a big operation. See, Trump's not even in charge. He's like a kid in there, you know, just eating jelly beans and looking out the window and going, oh, what's going on? I can hear it in his voice. He's lying through his teeth. Oh, I don't love you leaving at all. By the way, That is, what kind of a statement is that? I don't love you leaving. Yeah, I don't love firing anybody. I truly don't. I don't enjoy it. I don't like losing people. I don't like that people have to get low. By the way, he's bad at lying. He's bad at lying. He's a terrible liar, man. You can tell. Play one more time. One more time.
Marosa, what's going on? I just saw in the news that you're thinking about leaving. What happened?
General Kelly came to me and said that you guys wanted me to leave.
No, nobody even told me about it. Nobody. Wow. You know, they run a big operation, but I didn't know it. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Damn it. I don't love you leaving at all.
I don't love you leaving at all. At all. I don't know. You be the judge. I think he's lying through his teeth. And by the way, it also shows he's having a compassionate moment. He understands she's psychotic and she's going to turn on him. Now, why bring her into the White House to begin with? I'll tell you why. I'll tell you why it's nonsense. And why even people like Trump, who don't play the game of the left, don't play the game of political establishment, end up playing this game. And it always, always, always backfires. Don't go anywhere. Sam Rejofsky, back after this.
In this present crisis, government is the solution to our problem. Government is the problem. And Sam Nation is the solution. Of course, you need jelly beans for that.
Samuel Murjovsky reporting for duty here on the Sam Nation Radio Network, saluting you all. Oh. Can I just be honest about this Omarosa deal? This is what happens when we think that we need to have diversity window dressing. That's what she is. That's what she was. I said trash in, trash out. Take away for a minute that she's a black woman. What qualities does she actually possess that make her qualified to be in any large organization, let alone the White House? By the way, you know, this isn't her first White House gig. You know that she worked in the Clinton White House. She got friendly with Al Gore, and that's how I've read it. I don't know what that means. But she got friendly with Al Gore and ends up with a gig at the Commerce Department. This is a long time ago. This is before The Apprentice. And she was so hated. There was a woman there, a senior staffer, that threatened to punch her. She said, if you don't get rid of her, I am going to knock this bee out. No, it wasn't James Carville. I said woman. No, she's a totally unlikable person. The reason she was great on The Apprentice is because everybody hated her. People that loathsome, horrible people are great, are absolutely fantastic on reality TV shows because they keep our interest. So anyway, she's not qualified to be there, but the only reason she has this gig is because Trump needs diversity window dressing. He thinks he needs this. And this is the danger, right, that Republicans, that the Democrats even, that they run into, is they buy into – what's the worst thing you can throw at somebody? The worst label. Racist. Racist. He's a racist. And Trump has been hearing this over and over again, right, so many times. And we know he listens to his critics. We know – the left claims he's got thin skin. I'm less convinced of that. But he definitely listens to his critics. And the knee-jerk reaction is, You got, well, she, Omarosa would be great. She loves me. I love her. Yeah, she's a little kooky, but we bring her in and she'll help us, you know, overcome this label. You don't play that game. Because what happens is that incompetent people, regardless of their race, eventually have to be fired. And when you fire them, all hell will break loose. Not because you fired an incompetent, but because you're a racist son of a, you know what? You fired a black girl. You can't do it. There's, hey, I'm not making this up, by the way. This is the kind of cacophony of noise that is out there in the media this week. Georgetown professor Michael Eric Dyson, referring to Trump calling Omarosa a dog. This is after she's slandering him, lying about him, throwing years worth of family confidences to the wind. Yeah, she's acting like a dog. No, worse than a dog, right? She's totally disloyal. I have two dogs, and they would never turn me in. Anyway, so here's what he says. Eric Dyson, Georgetown. This is a Georgetown professor.
Dog, mongrel. Look at all the KKK language that was used. He's evoking an entire history of assault against black people with dehumanizing languages. So he might say that about other people as well. But when he applies it to Omarosa, and then he applies it to LeBron James, and he applies it to Don Lemon, he's doing something very specific. And we need white brothers and sisters and non-black people who are allies to call him on this. Don't just have the complicity of silence or, oh my God, and wring our hands. This is an assault, the likes of which we haven't seen from the presidency in so many decades. And that's one of the faux pas of many African-American people. Oh, well, he treated me nicely. Oh, he did this nicely. Yeah, the guy who put a plunger up the behind of Abner Louima was dating a black woman. So just because you get crumbs from massa's table doesn't mean you ain't on no plantation.
And as abhorrent and horrible as this statement is, it proves my point. This is how the race-baiting lobby thinks. The guy who put a plunger up the behind of Abner Louima was dating a black woman. So just because you get crumbs from master's table doesn't mean you ain't on no plantation. Do you understand this? You get it? You can surround yourself in emblems, as they put it, emblems of tolerance. But if they think that you're a racist, you're still a racist. If you exhibit racist actions, right? I don't know. Racist motivations, whatnot. All right, Sam Rzhovsky, back after this.
I was listening the other day to a friend of mine. His name is Sam Rzhovsky. You'll find him very interesting. He's very stylish. He's always wearing his suit. And if you want to hear someone's opinion that absolutely is correct, you listen to Sam. Anyone else is a waste of time.
Sam Rzhovsky, Sam Nation, Friday Funny. There was a parrot that apparently escaped in London. A macaw parrot. Colors, turquoise and yellow. The parrot's name was Jesse. And here's what happened. The parrot escaped. This is a problem. If you keep a parrot, you think it's a flightless bird, you've got the wings clipped, you've done all taken all necessary precautions, you leave a window open. It may surprise you that your parrot can go on the lam, and that's precisely what happened here. The parrot made it all the way up on the roof, and the owner of Jesse called the police, who in turn called the firefighting brigade, the London Fire Brigade, a.k.a. the LFB. Well, they get up to the roof, and I have a picture of this. It's got one of those giant extension ladders, you know, the kind that you and I would be terrified to get on. And these guys climb all the way to the peak of the roof, the highest point in this multi-story house. The only problem is that when they got to the top of the roof, the parrot told the firefighter, F you! I don't know if he used the full word. But he told them to F off. Yeah, the London Fire Brigade had a lot of fun with this because, they put it up on Instagram and now it's been retweeted and whatever, forwarded all over the place. But according to the firefighter, the exact words used by Jesse the parrot were to F off. And apparently the parrot used, yeah, it says here, used the full word. It's very rare for firefighters to be given such specific instructions by the rescuee. But apparently in this case, that's what happened. So if you do have a parrot, be careful what you teach him. This reminds me, of course, of my favorite story with parrots when we were on the Big Island family vacation. My parents were there. This was in the throes of the Obama administration. Our family, certainly no love lost for the president at the time. My dad makes it over to the cage here where the aviary, where all the parrots are. This was at the it was in Hilo on the Big Island, kind of near where the volcanoes are going off. Anyway, so there's an aviary there and a bunch of parrots, and they're talking. So my dad stood there for about 20 minutes trying to teach one of the parrots to say hope and change. Kind of succeeded with it. Kind of worked out. All right. That's it for Friday Funny. Back right after this.
You're looking for a show that doesn't sugarcoat the truth. Sam Nation will accommodate you.
Sam Rzhovsky, Sam Nation, here on the Sam Nation Radio Network. Rarely wrong, always right, providing cutting-edge analysis ahead of the mainstream chatter. So, I think this is funny, too, with this Omarosa situation, that now I'm reading, let's see what publication is, claiming that she has up to 200 tapes. Have you seen this? Who's reporting? New York Times. 200 tapes. Now, do you know what I love about this? Do you remember when Trump tweeted that he just found out that Obama had his wires tapped in Trump Tower? And the world melted because Trump was a buffoon. He was dumb. And there's no way he could have had his wires tapped because that's not how modern surveillance works. It's not wire tapping. It's electronic surveillance. Duh. So I'm curious here. Are we supposed to believe that Omarosa has, I don't know, this is like on analog tapes? Does she have an 8-tracks player hidden about her person? I demand that we call these digital recordings. You see the double standard? I mean, just... I'm just commenting. I'm just observing an obvious fact. Now, the other thing now is after Trump called her a dog and provoked some naturally vicious responses, we also have the media wondering out loud if Trump doesn't like dogs. Here's Brian Williams and a Washington Post reporter, Philip Rucker, actually having this debate.
Does this president really physically not like dogs?
That's right, Brian. He's actually the first president in more than 100 years who's not had a dog as a pet in the White House.
We launched an extensive web search that took us at least a few minutes, and we could only find one photo extant in all the land of Donald Trump with a dog.
Yes, but it's deadly serious what he does with that word, using it as an attack. He's dehumanizing his enemies. That's the goal there. And there's a long history, actually, of authoritarian leaders who've used these animalistic slurs as insults to dehumanize individuals or groups of people. We remember during the Holocaust, the Nazis would call Jews rats.
So on one part of the conversation, it's all about how can Trump not like dogs? I mean, everybody loves dogs, right? That's the implication. And the second part of it is, but how dare he use such dehumanizing language? Look, I mean, in blue parts of the country, dogs have more rights than people. I mean, look, it's like all these news stories about South Korea. And how dare they eat dogs? They're eating dogs in South Korea. And it's a huge news story. It's getting more coverage than political prisoners in camps starving to death in North Korea. If you listen to the media, literally the last month of coverage, political, you know, various coverage of the Korean Peninsula, you would think that the greatest affront to humanity is dog meat soup. It's just, I don't know. These people can't make up their minds. And it's this shifting tide. This is where the fake news label ends up sticking. This is why in every survey taken, people trust the media less than they do Trump. Because it's you shift the goalpost and they move him around in the same conversation. Now, I get why Trump doesn't have dogs, and I get it because, gosh, dang it, my dogs are driving me nuts right now. I need them to, Bella, Rudy, if you're listening, I need you to stop doing that thing homeless people do in San Francisco in my bedroom. That thing that homeless people do in San Francisco, that is not okay. And I'm done. I take them back to the scene of the crime. I smack them, you know, so you, and they get it. They know, they feel so much shame. So I'll break them of this habit. And that's, by the way, maybe that's what they need to do with homeless in San Francisco. They just need to, yep, that's your poop right there. Smack. Can't wait for the emails. Sam@samnation.com is the email. Back right after this.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, here's Johnny.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, on the show tonight is Sam Marjowski. Now, what Sam is the leading word in correct thinking, as opposed to Ed, which is drunk thinking. And that's usually where the left ends up, on the wrong side of right.
Sam Marjowski, Sam Nation, here on the Sam Nation Radio Network. Now, I am an observer from a distance now of the Mormon faith. Interested in it, just, you know, a lot of good friends and family that remain members of the church, and I, as a former member, I think I have some bit of insight. It's in the news, and so I wanted to talk about it. The Mormon Church is not called technically the Mormon Church; it's the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, and that's a mouthful, right? That's a mouthful. Now, they're Latter-day Saints are called Mormons because of the Book of Mormon, right, which is a book as revealed to Joseph Smith by God. It contains, at least in Mormon doctrine, pure words of God as revealed to Joseph Smith. So anyway, this is why they're called the Mormons. And incidentally, it is a brand that the church itself has embraced for a long time. And they've put out some websites, you know, who are the Mormons, we are the Mormons, you know, the different things. They've embraced the title in an effort, I think, to reduce the stigma of the word. And you invest all this time, effort, and energy into reducing the stigma of the word. And I think they did that very successfully. And now the president of the church has put out a statement saying, don't use Mormon, don't use the word or the acronym LDS, which is not a drug. It's stands for Latter-day Saint. Use the full, you know, name of the church, or alternatively call it the church, quote unquote. This is tricky. First of all, no one's going to do it. And so I'm picturing, one of the great things about members of the church, they're just really good, obedient people. They want to do the right thing. And so many of them are going to listen to their prophet. They're going to listen to President Nelson. And President Nelson says, don't use the Mormon word. It's mo no mo. So what they're going to do is they're going to be out and about. And people are going to say, oh, well, hey, you guys go to church. You seem like a great family. Well, tell us more. What church do you go to? We go to the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. And the person's going to look at them and blink. And then the reply is going to be the church. And the person's going to blink again. And what are they going to do? They're basically, it's going to force this very obedient, straight and narrow line Mormon to say, the Mormon church. Ah! And it's going to create scores of weird interactions that a proselytizing church does not want to create. So for someone who talks to God, I think a little bit of foresight. I'm not poking fun at it. I'm just saying it hasn't been thought through. And I think of myself as having a reasonably decent mind for marketing, and this just sounds like silliness to me. Embrace the label. You know, if you've got a label that you think has some taint to it, embrace it and change the meaning of the word. And the church was doing a fantastic job of that. And I think, in my opinion, this is a step in the wrong direction. So if somebody approaches you and say they belong to the church, they may not be, Rajneeshis or some weird cultists. They may just be your friendly neighborhood Mormons. Be advised. Have a great weekend. It was a pleasure, as always, to be here with you. The podcast will be up in minutes. If you're listening to these words, it happened. It loaded. But if you're listening to these words, know that others around you might not have this gift. So tell them. Spread the word. Evangelize. We are Sam Nation, a.k.a. The Podcast.